Hello, and welcome everyone to the American Humane Fireside Chat. My name is Indy, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. Please note this conference is being recorded, and for the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. If you require assistance at any point, please press star zero, and you will be connected to an operator. I'll now hand you over to your host, Dr. Robin Gansart, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're thrilled to have everyone here today join us. Welcome to our ninth Fireside Chat. Our Fireside Chats at American Humane have been a special forum for our very special friends, which we launched in order to share news about the state of the world's animals during the global pandemic, and to allow us a forum to discuss how we, as friends to the world's animals, can protect and improve life for animals living in every corner of the earth. You know, friends, during his 12 years in office, FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, brought millions together through his famous fireside chats to fight two formidable foes, the Great Depression and then World War II. FDR realized that in order to achieve victory over these threats, he not only had to bring the country together for a common purpose, but he had to bring together the best experts, the best people, and the best minds to serve the country and the American people's interest. At American Humane, we operate in the same way, working together to bring global consensus and cooperation, but also the world's very best experts, the best people, and our most passionate advocates who can help us successfully deliver on our vital mission to protect animals. And friends, today I'm so pleased to have with us three of the most remarkable voices and forces for animals with us to talk about the challenges facing Earth's creatures, what we can do about them, and what we together will be doing to make a difference. This is such an exciting fireside chat because I'm so pleased to start out with an incredible conversation about one of the campaigns that I know each of you have just truly embraced. Today, I'm here to welcome one of America's leading philanthropists and well-recognized advocates for animals, Gene Shapiroff. Gene is a renowned philanthropist, widely quoted animal advocate, and a national ambassador for American Humane. She has now stepped forward to lead our effort to help millions of animals during the COVID-19 crisis by becoming our national spokesperson for our Feed the Hungry effort. This vital campaign has already delivered support to feed nearly 400,000 shelter animals across our great country in just the past few weeks. And Jean is now lending her name and her powerful advocacy platform to push that number to more than a million. Jean, I don't know how to thank you enough, but you should know that with your help, hundreds of thousands of animals in very dire conditions will have food, medicine, comfort, kindness, and some for the very first time will experience love. I want to extend our gratitude and ask you about what you are seeing in your work, what kinds of impacts on animals you've observed as a result of the pandemic, and how you and the animals you love are responding to these extraordinary times. Jean, welcome to our Fireside Chat.
Thank you very much, Robin. And I want to thank all of you who've been involved in this campaign. This is extraordinarily important, and for me, this is a great honor to be involved. And just so that you know a little bit about me and my family, we have five rescue dogs, and these dogs give us great, great love. And when you bring an animal into your family, you know that you bring unconditional love into your family. And so right now what we're seeing across the United States is a situation that absolutely has to be rectified, and I believe that the American Humane is the group that can do this. And what we're seeing is that at many of the shelters, they don't have the money to put food on the table for the animals in the shelter. So many of the shelters are struggling financially. And what does this mean? This means no food for the animals. And American Humane has stepped to the plate to to help with this terrible, terrible situation. And I know it's a great honor even for all of us to be part of this campaign to change the situation so that no animal in the United States goes hungry. Right now we're seeing massive food lines at food pantries. Well, the same is at the animal shelters. The animals, many of them don't have the food. Right now, American Humane is up to 345,000 meals, but we need to get up to over 1 million. And so how do we do this? Very simply, all of us can participate by opening up our hearts and by giving a donation. And now for those of you who feel, well, my donation is not going to make a difference, never feel that way. Even a small donation, $10, $15, $25, $50, $100, together collectively, you can all make a massive, massive difference. And we can achieve this goal, and we will achieve this goal. Now, of course, for the major donors, anyone who has the ability to write a check for $10,000, $25,000, $100,000, or even $1 million, you will be making a massive difference. What do you think, Robin? Can we do this?
Oh, Jean, we can do this, and together I know we're going to do this. And, you know, I think about, I see and I witness here in Florida the long food lines for humans to get the much-needed food. And I know that those lines, we just don't see them at the animal shelters because the animals are already there. They are so in such desperate need. Such desperate need. And, you know, Jean, you and I have been talking much over the past week about the high number of unemployment, how there's going to possibly be many pets relinquished to shelters as people can't afford to feed their human family members. You and I know, are both really worried about the impact of unemployment on the ability to feed our companion animals and just basic, you know, pet food. And I know that this Feed the Hungry campaign can provide so many with that kind of help.
The program is so needed. Right now we have 39 million Americans out of work. And what does this mean? This means for their families they may not have food on the table. And so naturally what we're seeing across the country is a situation where the animals are going without food. And now some of the shelters are able to provide a food pantry for animals, but in most cases, there just isn't enough money. And so American Humane is going to fund and help shelters and rescue operations across the country by giving them the funds they need to help with animals. And unfortunately, because of this COVID-19 pandemic, we are starting to see surrenders of animals, which is very sad. And what is a surrender? This is when a family who loves their dog or cat, they can no longer afford to put the food on the table and can't afford the veterinarian bills. So they end up sending their dog back to a shelter. And as time goes on, we're expecting these numbers to become even greater. And so your help is needed more than ever. And when you donate to AmericanHumane.org. And I promise you, the reason why I got involved with American Humane is because I know that when I give my donation, I know that money's being well spent. The overhead is low. The leadership is fantastic. This is an organization that's been in existence since 1877. And they are premier in our country, helping animals across the world. They work with legislators to change legislation, to improve the situation for all of our animals around the country. They work with our veterans with programs to put the veterans paired with animals that can help them should they be suffering from different fears or anxieties due to a war-related illnesses, and they work with the general public, and that means everyone every shelter in the United States. And for me, this is a great honor. And remember, no donation is too small. I'd also like to speak a little bit about a fear that people have. They say, can my dog or cat get the coronavirus, and then can they transmit it to me? Well, I've been on many TV and radio stations talking about this because there so far have only been less than a handful of dogs and cats in the United States who've come down with this illness. And there has not been one case where a dog or a cat has given this disease to a human being. However, the CDC, just to be on the safe side, has put together a few guidelines that all of us can very easily abide by with our pets. And what are these guidelines? They are social distancing guidelines. First, when you take your dog out on a walk, make sure he's leashed. And when that dog comes into contact with other people or other dogs, you stay 6 feet away, just the way you would with yourself or with one of your family members. Next, you shouldn't really be going to the dog parks right now, and that's just to be extra, extra careful. Then, if you have a cat, you need to keep that cat inside. And, of course, if you're suffering from COVID-19, you need to socially isolate yourself, and you need to socially isolate from your pets. However, the chances of you giving your pet COVID-19 so far is very, very slim, and the chances of a dog or a cat, so far as we've seen in this country, there have really been no reported cases. So I hope this helps alleviate the fears. These are directly from the CDC, these points, and if you want to check yourself, just go to their website and punch in CDC guidelines for animals. But I can tell you there's nothing to be afraid of. And getting back to Robin, Robin, I hope this is helpful to have some more questions.
Oh, my gosh. It's so helpful, Jean. It's so helpful. And first of all, we're so grateful for your platform sharing with the whole community about the safety that we can exhibit with animals during this pandemic time. I have a thank you letter I want to read to you, Jean, that we've just received from a Feed the Hungry grant recipient. And I know it's going to warm your heart. It's going to warm the hearts of our listeners, too. This letter, a thank you letter, came from Sharon Peters. She's a co-founder of the Old Mutt Hut, a forever loving home for senior dogs in Colorado Springs, to which we made a Feed the Hungry grant. She wrote me, she said, mid-March through mid-May, essentially the full breadth of duration of the pandemic lockdown is always our most expensive time frame. That's frightening when donations are down, and we're quite certain they'll be down for at least the next 2 to 3 months as people try to recover from what COVID has brought. Receiving this grant at this moment when there are so many dogs to feed and keep healthy means the world, and far few sleepless nights. Wow, we don't want Sharon to have sleepless nights. She needs to get sleep to take care of those senior dogs at the Old Mutt Hut, and we're so grateful for Sharon for what she does to take care of these gray muzzles and to give them a chance to live out their lives in a forever loving home. Our Feed the Hungry campaign, Jean, is going to allow the Old Mutt Hut to continue, give those dogs the best food and medical attention and care during this difficult time. And working together with Jean, working with all of you on this call and all of our supporters has allowed us to develop and deliver life-saving help to hundreds of thousands of dogs, cats, horses, sheep, and even some remarkable endangered animals living in conservation centers. We're so grateful to everyone who's given to this campaign, pledged to this campaign. And again, as Jean suggested, to learn more, you can visit AmericanHumane.org and make a donation today. And that little bit of kindness to our best friends in their worst times goes such a long way. And again, thank you to the Old Mutt Hut for what they're doing every day. Thanks to all the recipients of our Feed the Hungry funds for really getting out there and helping the voiceless during this incredible challenging time of the pandemic. Jean, I'm so grateful to you for your leadership. I know we're going to help make this happen. 1 million meals is together our goal. Jean, thank you so much for what you're doing to make that happen.
Well, thank you, Robin. And I want to thank all of the participants today and everyone who is involved in supporting this effort on behalf of the American Humane, because together we will get to that $1 million mark. And I have a special message to all the larger donors. I want to thank you. And the impact of your larger gifts is enormous. And also I want to thank those that are giving the gifts of $50, $25, $100, because these donations make a massive difference. And anyone who wants to give on a monthly basis to help, it really will help these shelters and these different rescue groups that are struggling to put food on the table for all our furry friends. And I can't think of anything more heartbreaking than to see our beloved pets, those that give us so much unconditional love, to have a situation where they don't have any food. It's just heartbreaking to me, and I don't want to see that, and I know none of you want to see this. And, Robin, you're doing an amazing job. Thank you so much. And all of you are doing a great, great job. And remember, when you respond to a little animal who doesn't have a voice of his own, and you help that animal, well, God's going to give you extra special blessings. So I thank all of you for your involvement.
Oh, thank you, Jean, and thanks so much for joining us for our Fireside Chat. I hope you'll stay with us, because there might be questions at the end of our session today that our listeners may have for you.
Absolutely. I'm here.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Well, friends, our first part of today's chat's about Feed the Hungry, because everyone's been so interested in the kind of impact we've been having. And again, a big shout out to all of our rescue and shelter friends for the incredible work they're doing on the front line of the COVID-19 pandemic. Well, friends, I'd also now like to turn to another topic for all of our animal lovers that has been deeply, deeply concerning, and that is the impact of COVID-19 as a global pandemic on wild animal populations. In fact, friends, you know, we've had a lot of thought leadership on this at American Humane. I'm so thrilled to tell you we were just notified about 10 minutes ago that the International Business Times is going to publish my latest thought leadership piece on coronavirus and the impact on poaching. And I'm thrilled that biodiversity as a global issue is going to be brought up in the International Business Times, because this is truly a global issue. Animal welfare and conservation knows no geographic bounds, and I'm delighted that they're going to cover our thought leadership on this very important and relevant topic. And today, I'm so delighted that we have one of the most amazing and world famous zoological experts, Brad Andrews, joining us. He's our Global Director for Conservation at American Humane. Been so proud to work alongside this gentleman in our development of our global humane conservation efforts. Brad, thrilled to welcome you. And I also want to welcome back top veterinarian and animal health expert, Dr. Tom Edlane, who crafted many of those CDC guidelines that Jean has just shared with you regarding companion animals and COVID-19. Brad, Tom, welcome to our call. We're delighted to have you here today to share your expert perspectives on how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting not just people, but animals around the world. Brad, talk to me, if you can, share with me about what you're hearing about the impact in ecotourism, the increased poaching, and what's happening with the endangered species that we so love and want to protect.
Well, thank you, Robin. I'm glad to be part of your conversation today. And let me start by saying that, you know, the conservation world right now is obviously affected by this COVID-19 issue, just like we are. Conservation, though, it has pluses and minuses. There's areas right now where we're seeing wildlife flourish because of the inactivity of too many humans. So it's sort of an inverse process going on in certain parts of the world where the animals are actually doing very well because they're not being harassed or bothered, and they don't have, certain areas. They're roaming around and having a good time, and food is plentiful at this point in the time of the year and things like that. So there's a positive aspect to this, but obviously there's a negative aspect to it. And that, again, because when you think about the different parts of the world that are taking where animals are being taken care of, and you mentioned wild, and I want to clarify that when people talk about the wild, in quotes, there isn't much wild left anymore. In reality, everywhere you go in different parts of the world where the biodiversity is rich, in South America, Africa, India, Southeast Asia, a lot of the areas that are protected habitats or concessions or huge, giant national parks, and they have people there that love the animals, that are knowledgeable about the animals. But right now, nobody is visiting those parks. So ecotourism has come to a complete standstill. There's no money. There's no guides. There's nobody protecting the animals. Poaching is increasing. In fact, I was talking to a good friend of mine from South Africa just yesterday, and a lot of people that live in the rural villages are going outside and now starting to poach some of the smaller animals because of lack of food. So it has an inverse negative aspects to this also. And this is not good because, you know, conservation, when everybody gets down to it, it takes money also, and it takes good, knowledgeable people to do the right things.
So, Brad, what you just discussed was, or just mentioned, was that now locals, because they are having food shortages and supplies in these countries where we have the endangered species populations, right? There's no money coming in, no revenue coming in. Certainly a crisis in healthcare for sure. And you're saying that they're going into the parks and the animals they were paid earlier to protect, they're now killing for food?
Well, I don't know if the individual guides and their families are, but there's other people in, you know, nearby areas that have to find other, you know, food for their families. And when you look at some of these huge parks in like the Kruger National Park, when you drive into Kruger National Park, there's actually a fence boundary around the park, and there's people that live in farms and other local villages around there, and a lot of their livelihood is dependent upon supporting that national park. But now they have no money, and so the animals are going to end up suffering inadvertently. And this has unintended consequences to it, because when you think about the illegal trade now is starting to increase. The illegal trade of wildlife is just a horrendous process in the project. It goes on and on and on, and animals are shipped from different parts of the world into other parts of the world for specific issues in terms of medicinal purposes, which are absolutely crazy, and some of these animals are suffering horrible deaths, and so this whole wildlife trafficking thing has potential unintended consequences, because what's happening now is people are talking about legislating how we stop the illegal trade of animals, which is great, but we need to make sure that we have the ability to move animals from place to place for translocation, reintroduction, and protection. So there has to be a common sense approach to this so that the animals have a home and a place to go. The illegal trade, we've got to get rid of. But we've got to be able to move animals for the right reasons to do the right things for the long-term conservation of some of these species.
You know, Brad, you and I both have traveled the world. You and I have spent a lot of time together in China working on significant animal welfare issues. We've both spent time in Africa and certainly in the Middle East working on these issues over the past couple of years. You know, one thing that we've talked about a lot as a country, and I think it was really our country's first face-to-face dialogue around what a wet market is. I think many people in our country before the global coronavirus pandemic, and few people had heard of a wet market, right? And I know you've seen them, and I've certainly seen them. These are incredibly tragic situations from an animal welfare perspective, and now we know that it's crossed over into a human welfare issue. Can you share with us a little bit about your thoughts about wet markets that you've seen in your career protecting animals?
Yeah, I certainly can. And one of the things we all have to be aware of is there's two different transmission processes. We talk about zoonotic, which is really an infectious disease caused by bacteria, a virus, or parasites that transfer between animals to people. There's also the anthropogenic process, where since the human beings, you know, take care of what should be taking care of this earth, what happens with the influence that human beings have with habitat destruction, pollution, climate change, and those issues, that we make it unbearable for certain animals to live. So it goes both ways here. We have to be able to be stewards of the earth to make sure this works. And what's happening when you talk about some of these animals that are in wet markets, for instance, a wet market is really selling fresh meat, fish, produce, or live animals, really. And really what happens is they're held in squalid, you know, situations and cramped situations, and they're all thrown in little cages, and you see hundreds of fish in a little tiny aquarium, and you see, you know, poultry jammed in and turtles jammed into different little spaces, and people come and buy this food for food, you know, buy these animals for food. And what happens is, as we know, the suspected problem that happened in Wuhan is that a bat was probably in a stressful situation in a cage and probably with many other bats and was sold as food, and therefore, bingo, we suddenly have a virus being spread. And that is a zoonotic expression. So in some of the things I have seen over the years, you walk into a building and you just see floor after floor after floor of different situations where there's live food, there's dead food, and there's unsanitary conditions. And I know some of this is a cultural issue and some of it is a learning issue, but these things have to be talked about, and common sense has to approach all of these issues so that it makes it safe for everyone, including the animals, because we've got to be fair about this. And the human being is the only life form on Earth that can make it good for the animals or bad for the animals. The animals can't do anything on their own. They can't control what's happening to their habitat, the way they're taken care of, and the way they're housed. So if we as human beings don't do our job, then we're going to continue to have wet markets, illegal trade, and zoonotic and anthropogenic issues.
You know, Brad, you and I have been working on, for the past 2 years together, on a film, Escape from Extinction, which we will roll out here very, very soon. Escape from Extinction, friends, features the incredible Helen Mirren as our narrator. It is an incredible production regarding the very issue of the sixth mass extinction. And, Brad, I think these issues have now come to the forefront because of the global pandemic, and now we see ever-increasing threats to what conservation was also facing, the sixth mass extinction. Can you share your thoughts about our new film? Of course, it was a pleasure to work with Ms. Mirren on the production. Please, Brad, share with us your thoughts about our film.
Well, the film Escape from Extinction is very exciting because I think it's going to portray exactly what's going on in this day and age, that we've lost a lot of species and we're losing species, but there is hope. There's hope because we have smart, knowledgeable people that care about animals, know about animals, that want to work together and make sure that there's a future for those animals in our lives. And so we're going to have success stories in there. We're also going to see some sad stories. But the reality is people have to sort of wake up and realize that this sixth mass extinction is ongoing. And it's because there's, quite frankly, too many people inhabiting this earth. And if we want to have the right thing to do, we've got to think about how we manage these animals and take care of them properly. So it's interesting because when you think about it, and E.O. Wilson made a comment to me through a book that he wrote, and I read it, and he said, you know, if there's a child born today, and if that child is lucky enough to, if he or she happens to be lucky enough to live 80 years, 50% of the species on this globe will be gone by the time that person reaches 80. So in 80 short years, we're going to lose half of the species. And when you stop and think about the issues that go on with our oceans, the oceans are an unknown entity where we do a lot of science and we try and predict the stock and the catches. And what we're going to probably have in the next 50 years is empty oceans. We've got to figure out how to be more knowledgeable, how to be smarter and faster to try and save some of these issues and get them on the forefront and stop talking about nonsense amongst politicians and do the right things.
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head a lot with what you just said. We need to stop talking nonsense and get down to practical solutions on a whole lot of issues, Brad. I want to turn it over to Tom. Dr. Tom Edling, friends, as you remember, has worked for years, one of our foremost nation's veterinarians. Really, we affectionately call him our own Dr. Fauci, right? He's been such an expert in supporting our programs at American Humane, particularly our Humane Hollywood program, and he's been with the CDC for years as an expert in the area of animal health and the kinds of problems we're seeing today with the deadly worldwide pandemic. Tom, what can you add, particularly to Brad's insights about how the pandemic is affecting wild animal populations, maybe not just from poaching, but also from a health perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. I love Brad's comments, and they're so right on. You know, I haven't seen nearly as much or traveled as much as Brad and you, Robin, but I've been to South and Central America many times and have seen their versions of the wet markets. And from a veterinary perspective, you know, Brad brought up a really good point. When these animals are captured, you know, this is such an unnatural thing. Their immune systems start to drop. They start shedding bacteria, viruses, fungus, that if they have it, much more than they would if they were a natural, healthy animal flying around in their normal habitat. They're crammed in these cages. And so by the time they're put in a cage, travel and sit in these wet markets, and they're terrified because all these strange things are going on around them, and then many of them are slaughtered right there, they have much more disease than they would if they were in their normal habitat. So that even compounds the issue that these animals are shedding things they normally wouldn't shed, and, you know, that just perpetuates what happens in these horrible wet markets. So absolutely, you know, from the medical standpoint, it makes things so much worse. Another really good point Brad made that I was just looking at a Senate bill this morning, and, you know, they're working on really good bills to try to reduce animal taking animals and transporting them and things like that. But as Brad said, there's a lot of unintended consequences. These bills need to be written very, very carefully so you don't stop the transportation of animals that is needed, but you do stop it that is not needed. And it's very hard to word those bills correctly. So we're working on some bills right now helping write the language correctly so we don't stop the movement of animals around the world that is needed, but we do stop the unneeded movement. And that's a really tricky line to walk. And so really interesting things going on right now in the world. And it's a really tough place to be.
Well, I think I even, you know, absolutely it's a tough place and tough times to be. And again, legislators need to turn to experts such as both you, Tom, and you, Brad, to write this kind of legislation so it doesn't have the terrible unintended consequences. And I know, you know, talk about unintended consequences. Botswana had some policies that came out, and then towards the end of last year, they even agreed to start opening up to hunting again of elephant populations. Again, a terrible outcome for elephants that, you know, are clearly at threat in terms of extinction. So lots of serious issues that are global. And again, animal welfare knows no boundaries. And clearly we know today that the reason we have this global pandemic called the coronavirus is because of a broken social contract that we've had with animals. And I want to go back to that. Tom, tell us about your ideas of the broken social contract that we have with animals.
Oh, absolutely. This is something I've actually written about for years. It's the way I look at it, we all, a long time ago, who knows when, we all started together and we were all kind of, all of us animals were together in the wild in nature. You know, over the years, humans became humans and many animals changed in different animal forms, but as Brad said, we're the only animal that is current today that actually can change things. You know, we think, we talk, we can do all sorts of things, and all the other animals are at our mercy, so to speak. And we have been using animals in good and bad ways for thousands of years. domestication and all the different ways that humans use animals now, whether it's for food, for research, for pets, you know, all these ways that we use animals, there's a social contract. We have to treat animals as equals because they are equals in the world. You know, we all live in this world together. And as Brad said, there's way too many of us humans now, and we're pushing out the animals, making a lot of difference. From the pet side, you know, we breed so many animals that aren't needed. We've done so many different things. It's the social contract. It's the moral of the human that has to – we need to step back up to the plate and treat animals on the equal footing as they are. And we haven't done that. And that's one of the things I know you've been pushing for so hard, Robin, with American Humane, is let's get back on this equal footing. Yeah, we have the ability to control it, but we also need to understand they're at our mercy, and it is our duty. It's our moral obligation to treat them with respect and dignity. So absolutely, yes. It's always been near and dear to my heart.
I know. We're so fortunate to have you at American Humane to use our platform to further this conversation with all the various audiences, particularly those legislators who can make better policy if they're engaged with groups and thought leaders such as Tom and Brad on writing such very important legislation. Well, friends, this has been another great opportunity to get the real facts out there regarding animals and the world we share. I'm so grateful for Jean for her leadership with Feed the Hungry campaign and how many animals, hundreds of thousands of animals, were impacting this very moment because of you, our friends, and certainly Jean and her leadership of our campaign. So thank you all for what you're doing to feed the hungry. I also want to thank Tom and Brad for their incredible leadership regarding the most endangered creatures of our earth. Certainly our efforts in conservation know no boundaries, and we're so proud to have their thought leadership and contributions to our cause. And thank you for updating us on this very important situation regarding the endangered species and how the pandemic is impacting. Friends, please stay tuned to This Weekend. The International Business Times will have our latest thought leadership op-ed, our opinion editorial on coronavirus and the pandemic. So this is an incredibly important fireside chat. So grateful to Brad Andrews, Dr. Tom Edlin, and Jean Shafiroff for visiting with us and sharing their expertise and love for animals during the most difficult of times. Friends, we must remember that no matter how far apart all of us are as we negotiate this modern disaster, we can still continue to work together effectively and make a difference for millions and billions of animals by collaborating. Please help us spread the word about the work we're doing. Our campaigns, our newsletters, our annual impact report are all on our website, AmericanHumane.org, and you can use those to help recruit new humane warriors for our cause, which is now needed and more vital than ever before. I want to thank you all for what you've done, what you're doing, and what you're continuing to do every day for the cause of animals. And I'm looking forward to welcoming you in two more weeks for our next Fireside Chat. In the meantime, we're going to open it up to you for questions that you have of our incredible speakers. Our operator will come on and help us navigate questions so that we can invite you to ask our incredible experts about their opinions on something near and dear to your heart. Operator, please, let's get questions from our live audience.
Thank you, Robin. So if you would like to ask a question or make a contribution on today's call, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure your line remains unmuted locally. I will then speak to you individually, take your full name, and introduce you to the call.
Great. While we're waiting for your questions to happen, again, I want to assure everyone that our next impact report will be out in the month of June, talking about the impact American Humane's had over the past year. And back to Jean's point, too, your donations to American Humane, your contributions to American Humane are significant. We are 91 cents on every dollar going right to program. It's the highest in the entire humane community. We're the only 4-star Gold Guide Star National Humane Organization in our great country. So proud of all of those incredible ratings ratings and ratios that we have to offer, our integrity and stewardship of funds that you entrust us with go so served well for the animals. And so I'm grateful for you for your support and your leadership and your contributions to our cause. Looking now,
Robin.
Operator, do we have a question? Yes. Jean, please.
Oh, well, just quickly, I just want to say to all the listeners that when you know that 91% of your money is going to programs and to help the animals, this is an amazing thing. And not too many organizations operate like this, and certainly none in the humane area.
Thank you, Jean. It is stunning. And again, it's our it's American Humane's ability to be very focused from a fiduciary standpoint. So this is really great. Operator, do we have any questions?
We currently have no questions coming through. As another reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypads.
Wonderful. I do just have an email question that came to me. Someone has asked, Jean, if you could share with us the names of your 5 rescue dogs. So someone really fell in love with the fact that you have 5 rescue dogs. I'd love if you could share names and a little bit about your dogs.
Yes, well, this is my family together. We have 5 rescue dogs. And my husband and I have Rosita. And Rosita comes from the island of Antigua. She was living on a slab of concrete and never really had contact with any other animals. And so when one of my daughters went down there, she rescued Rosita. And then our oldest daughter has 2 chihuahuas, and Charlie, he is now 15 years old and is a strong little guy with a mighty voice. And then she has Henry, another chihuahua, adorable little guy. And then my second daughter has a pit bull, and we think this pit bull may have been used as a bait in some of the pit bull fights, a darling little girl named Daisy. And then finally, we have a family member's friend who has another dog, and his name is Sherman.
Oh, how wonderful.
The love of our life. We love them so much. They bring so much love. And I don't know what we do without them.
I love that, Jean. Thank you. And thanks to our listener for emailing me that question. I've got one more emailed question that just came through to me, too. Someone has asked, one of our listeners have asked, Tom and Brad, where do you think there are the most at-risk animals? What country has the most at-risk animals right now due to the coronavirus pandemic? Tom, Brad, what are your thoughts on that?
That's a tough question. I mean, I think when you look at the biodiversity hotspots of, again, Southeast Asia, Africa, and South America, I think those are the most at risk in terms of those particular areas that could be managed or taken care of or lack thereof. Of course, the same thing can happen here in North America also, but, you know, it's interesting because one of the things that's so important is when you have the ability to take your family and go out after the pandemic eases, and you should visit the good zoos and the good aquariums throughout your neighborhoods, because these are the people that do the work in these biodiversity hotspots. They're the ones that have the knowledgeable people and the money that goes there, and they've been having a tough time. So, Tom, I don't know if you have a better idea where hotspots might be.
We might have, did we lose Tom?
I guess we might have.
I got lost. I just got back on. Sorry about that.
good. Tell us, Tom, what do you think in terms of the hot spots for conservation for endangered species right now due to the pandemic?
You know, that, I'm sure Brad knows a lot more about that than I do.
I don't do as much outside the United States, but I think the United States is one of the larger areas when you're talking about some of the stuff, some of the animals that aren't the megafauna. Amphibians, reptiles all over the United States are, the numbers are crashing. Most of it is just habitat destruction. It's really incredible to see the destruction of the habitat and then the animals, and we're not even paying that much attention to it. And we need to pay attention all over the world. And I know Brad, I'm sure, brought up the megafauna and a lot of the animals all over the world, but the amphibians, reptiles everywhere. It's everywhere. It's not just one location. You look at the reefs, you look at the, overfishing, you look at, just everywhere in the world. It's incredible the habitat destruction and the loss of animals just from my years of going to Central and South America. As countries develop, and, you certainly cannot blame countries for developing, but as they develop, they go through the different stages that the United States went through back in the early 1900s. And they repeat the same mistakes we made, using the different, stuff like DDT is still used in areas. It's not sold in the United States anymore, but those companies are selling it in other parts of the world and causing problems. So it's everywhere. I really can't pinpoint anything. It's all over.
Well, that's really, really good to know, because it's a good reminder to all of us that we can all have an impact on conservation, not just in Africa or in Southeast Asia, but even in our own backyard, to be a voice for the animals and the biodiversity that exists in our hometown communities, which makes everyone on this call a hometown hero, champion of compassion, and we can all use our voices and our platforms both locally, statewide, certainly around our great country, and globally, to be the fighter for animals. They certainly need to have a voice, and we are their voice together. Well, friends, as we wrap up today's Fireside Chat, I want to thank Jean Shafiroff for her exceptional leadership of our Feed the Hungry Fund. I want to thank Dr. Tom Edling for his leadership of the Humane Hollywood Program, and certainly his national contributions to the CDC during this global pandemic and our own policies and procedures at American Humane. And I want to thank Brad Andrews for his significant contributions to saving animals around the world and his incredible career as one of the world's most renowned zoological experts. Thank you for coming and sharing your knowledge with us today. Friends, in 2 more weeks, I hope you'll join us for our next Fireside Chat. Again, thank you all for what you've done, what you're doing, and continue to do every day for the cause of animals. I look forward to having you join us again in 2 weeks as we close every Fireside Chat. God bless America, and God bless American Humane. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for joining today's conference. You may now disconnect your lines. Hosts, please stay on the line and await further instructions.